Hello, this is Hugh Beard, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa at any point this evening, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, Hugh, thank you very much, and I also want to thank all of our listeners and folks who are participating in tonight's phone call in the 43rd Senatorial District. I think folks know some of the best feedback we get, Hugh, is from ideas and discussions that we have when we talk directly with our constituency, whether it's back in the district at a community meeting or whether it's through the telephone town halls that we've been doing last year or so. It's always a great opportunity to hear what's on the minds of our residents in our district. So, but issues that are important here in the Commonwealth and some of the things that are going on locally in the Pittsburgh-Allegheny County region. So I'm very pleased to be able to offer tonight another opportunity to have that conversation. I would just remind listeners, if they have a question that they'd like to ask us, we will put them through the process, but they need to press star 3 on their phone and then proceed to ask the question that they have. And I'll be happy to answer as many calls, and our goal is to provide information and answer as many calls as possible as we go forward tonight.
Thank you, Senator. Again, for those that are just joining us, if you have a question for Senator Costa at any point this evening, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, while we have a number of people that are calling in and ready to participate, can you give a little bit of background to those who have joined us as to what are the things we're looking at in upcoming in this legislative session?
Well, we have a number of things that are going on. First and foremost, we have a new governor who in about another month will provide us with a proposed budget for the 2015-16 fiscal year. And we're excited about the opportunity to have a Democratic governor who I think will try to take Pennsylvania in a little bit of a different direction on some of the issues that we were concerned about over the past 4 years. But we must recognize that we have some pretty serious fiscal and financial concerns here in the Commonwealth. While we're doing okay this fiscal year, we're meeting our budget projections for the 14-15 fiscal year. We look at a nearly $2-plus billion budget structural deficit that we need to address as we go forward. So the goal is going to be figure out a way to work in a bipartisan, bicameral way in which we could close that shortfall and do the things that we talked about over the course of the past year in terms of investments that we want to make. Investments in education, for example, I think is one thing that members and during last year's election heard loud and clear, making investments in education and making investments in how we're going to grow jobs in the Commonwealth. Those are probably two themes that we heard quite a bit about throughout Pennsylvania and clearly played themselves out through the gubernatorial election that took place last year. So we're working towards that end to try to address that issue and try to address a way in which we can restore financial stability to Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, over the course of the past year and a half, Pennsylvania suffered from three bond rating downgrades that really impacted our ability and questioned the stability of the Commonwealth. So we have to restore that as we go forward, and that'll be a big part of the conversation, Hugh.
All right, hey Jay, just for those who just joined us, again, we have a new governor that has just been elected. We just had the swearing in. The new legislature has just been sworn in. Can you go through a little bit of the process? The government will be delivering a budget address fairly soon.
Right.
And then if you go through the for those who have joined us, what the process is?
Well, the governor is required to provide the legislature, or the General Assembly, with a balanced budget. So he makes budget recommendations, and it'll be done, I believe, on March 4th, March 3rd or March 4th of this year, the first Tuesday in March. And then we will then go through a budget process or budget hearing process, an appropriation hearing process, where each of the parts of the budget, the some 500-plus lines, will be analyzed by appropriation committee members both in the Senate and in the House. And this various agencies or department heads or secretaries would come in and make their presentation to those committees, you know, stating why they need whatever resources they have laid out in that budget proposal, why it's necessary for that to take place. That'll take place over the course of about 3.5 weeks, and then we will come back to the General Assembly in early April, and we will begin a process by which we will deliberate a budget that will meet the needs of the Pennsylvania residents. Hopefully, it's fairly consistent with what Governor Wolf will be proposing, and that'll be part of the process as we go bring that closure. We're required to close the budget out by June 30th of this year, and my hope is that we'll be able to meet that deadline with a balanced budget that meets the needs of Pennsylvanians.
Thank you, Jay, and we've had a number of folks that have joined us. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa at any point this evening, you can come online, get in the queue, and we'll get you on the air as quickly as possible by pressing star 3. Senator, we're going to go to the callers right now. First caller is Janet. Janet, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Janet.
Hi, Senator Costa. I was wondering, you had a paper shredding and recycling event this past summer over in Edgewood, and I was wondering if you were planning to do that again this coming year sometime and where that location might be. And
yes,
then
we
also,
I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay. My second question is I live on Barton Drive in Churchill, and our backyards are perpendicular to the Parkway East, and between our backyards and the Parkway is what the neighbors call a no man's land that actually belongs to the state, and it really needs to be cleared out with a lot of debris. We get a lot of litter from people on the Parkway. And there's a trench along there that collects the water when it rains or snows and runs down the hill. And it's getting clogged up, and it's starting to come into our backyards a little bit. It's been done once since I've lived here, and I'm in this house 20 years. So I was wondering if we could arrange something about that.
Yeah, what I can do is we'll get your name and information and reach out to you and have somebody out there, both from PennDOT and from the borough, to work to try to see what the problem is and try to resolve it. So we're going to ask you to maybe do me a favor. Give my office a call tomorrow, if you could, at 412-241-6690. Ask for Elaine, and she will be able to provide you with the relevant information. We'll take your name and information and make sure we get out there quickly and bring the PennDOT folks out and discuss that. With respect to the shredding event, we are scheduled to do one in May. We're working to schedule one in May and one in September this year. We're likely to do two events this year. We've not nailed down a location, but we will make it available to folks very, very soon. But the shredding events have become very popular, and I think we're going to continue to do, as I said, we'll do two this year.
Well, Janet, thank you very much for the call. Again, for those of you that joined us, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press star 3 on your keypad, and we'll get you on as quickly as possible. Senator, we're going to go to Kathy now. Kathy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Senator Costa, Kathy DiFilippo here from Churchill Borough. I was very upset that Pennsylvania didn't accept the Medicare enhancement that was offered for the Affordable Care Act. And it was my opinion, or I thought, that Governor Wolf was going to make the transition from this Corbett plan of Healthy PA to the original Medicaid enhancement. What's happening there?
You are correct. Governor Wolf has been engaged in that conversation. He's been in office now a couple of weeks. As you can imagine, there are a number of things that are on his plate, but clearly accepting the Medicaid expansion as part of the solution to address the health care for 500,000 folks and driving about $2 to $3 billion worth of health care delivery into Pennsylvania, particularly in southeast and southwestern Pennsylvania, because of the level of health care delivery we provide. I believe that we are going to move forward, and you're going to hear more of a conversation on that when the governor does his budget address very soon. To us, that is a major issue, and like you, we are very disappointed that Governor Corbett then chose to go ahead and not necessarily reject the Medicaid expansion, but put into place a more private provider model, which we thought was less efficient and more costly and didn't provide the level of services and the level of benefits that we thought were appropriate to those working Pennsylvanians. And we're talking 500,000 individuals who work every day who would have been able to receive a very modest level of health care. We're continuing to pursue that, and I believe that you will see more conversation about that as we go forward in the weeks ahead.
Kathy, thank you very much for your call. Again, for those that joined us, you can ask Senator Costa a question by pressing star 3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the caller. We're going to go now to Dean, who has a question about state parks. Dean, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa. Dean, are you there?
Oh, it's Marion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're talking to me? I'm sorry. You're talking to me? Marion from Squirrel Hill.
Hi, Marion.
Yes. Hi. All right. I'm very much concerned with the environmental and the state parks, and that leads me to wonder what in the world is going to happen to our state parks, which are, I've been in a great number, probably all of them up to the center part of the state. What's happening with this fracking? I'm very concerned that that's going to produce damage to the environment, to the animals, to the whole park area. What's going on, and how can, I mean, what's your position on fracking near state parks?
I agree that the state parks are tremendous and valuable assets to the Commonwealth, and the people of Pennsylvania have every right to expect that we're going to do everything we can to protect them. I supported, over the course of the past several years, a moratorium on any additional drilling in our state parks and our state forest lands, and Corbett, as you know, reversed that. I'm very happy to report to you that just this week, Governor Wolf signed an executive order that would put a moratorium on any type of drilling in any of our state parks and our state lands. So it's great to see that, and we continue to support what the governor's doing along those lines.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Senator. We have a number of people that want to speak with you this evening. We're going to go to Dennis now. Dennis, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good afternoon, Senator Costa. This is Dennis Hughes. How you doing?
Hi, Dennis.
Okay, listen, Senator, I have a comment and I have a question.
Sure.
By me being a Vietnam veteran who's been home 47 years, you know, I just want people to understand that all veterans are heroes, and it doesn't make a difference what war they were in. Veterans die so that you all might have the freedoms that you have today. And all wars are the same. All wars are the same. You know, and I just want to, you know, get that out of there because, like I said, I've been home 47 years. And I just want to, because I'm not seeing this. Now, I go around the country and I speak a lot. And I'm not seeing this. I'd like to see more done. There's more homelessness veterans and there's more suicide. They just passed a bill today pertaining to suicide. But it is just reflecting on the Iraq and Afghanistan troops. It should reflect on all veterans, no matter what war they were in. Those are my comments for the Vietnam part. Now, I have a problem. I have a deceased son that died 19 years ago, Senator. 19 years ago. And every week, I get something in the mail with his name on. It's bad enough I have to deal with the after effects of the Vietnam War, and then for me to see my deceased son's name every week, what did they do? Go to the grave and dig up my son's name? I'm tired of it.
Well, Dennis,
is this something we can do?
Thank you very much for your service. We truly appreciate what you've done for all of us, and we appreciate it very much. With respect to benefits and programs for veterans, Senate Democrats last year launched a veterans package of bills, a variety of which, in a variety of different ways, would have provided assistance to our veterans, regardless of what war they were in. And we're going to continue to pursue those. Last year, we had success with legislation that Senator Hughes introduced that provided for a preference for veterans on housing list in terms of housing, looking for housing, that veterans would receive preferential points towards that to make it easier for them to qualify. And we continue to have programs that will do that. I can share with you at some point the list of bills that we have that would relate to our veterans package of bills, but they relate to a variety of areas. They relate to housing, as we talked about. They relate to programs that veterans would be able to access themselves to for a variety of physical health and mental health issues that need to be addressed, and other types of support that veterans will need to do. Veterans' preference with respect to small businesses, for example, and making sure that we include them in that conversation as well. Personally, one of the things that we do in recognition of the work that we do, what veterans have done for us and are working with them, we provide a veterans luncheon each year to honor those veterans who provide a great level of service to our country and to provide us with the freedoms that we enjoy. And we're going to continue to do that because I think it's important that we honor our veterans and recognize them for the work that they've done. With respect to your issue with your son, I'm sorry to hear that you're still getting mail after all these years, but I would recommend that we contact the post office and indicate to them that there's mail that should not come to you along those lines. So that's one of the things that I think we can do going forward. Also, I recommend maybe you call Elaine in my office, 412-241-6677. Ask for Elaine, and we will get that information. We'll coordinate that with the post office for you and also make certain that we reach out to Congressman Mike Doyle to also get an update on some of the veterans programs that are being done at the federal level.
Well, Senator,
thank you, buddy.
Senator, we have a number of folks who want to speak with you. Again, for those that have joined us, you can dial press star 3 on the keypad, and we'll get you on the line. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers right now. We're going to go to Sandra. Sandra, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa. Sandra, there? Sorry, Sandra's not coming on. Senator, there's a number of things that that are coming up in the legislature. We have a number of ideas that that are in front of the folks who want to speak with you this evening, and we're going to go back to the callers at this point. Let's see if we can get Sandra on the line. Senator, if we can expand a little bit about relative things in the Senate, how the Senate will progress this year. I know we talked about the process. The budget process goes through June. If you can expand a little bit on that,
Yeah, well, there'll be hearings on each of the agencies, and this year in particular, there's a concern about the level of funding for education, and we're making certain, trying to make sure that we provide for appropriate level of funding for our education, for our schools, both any from K to 12, but also pre-K and our higher ed as well. You know, just today we had a very important press conference on what we call our college access plan. About 12 Senate Democrats joined together to make sure that we provide legislation, have a dialogue about how it is we can make higher education more affordable for folks to be able to really become engaged in attending our higher education institutions. So we're working very hard towards that end to provide a variety of bills along those lines. Those type of things will be discussed as we go forward over the course of the next several weeks.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Senator, we're going to return back to the callers. We're going to go to Chris. Chris, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, Senator Costa. I'd like to know, what are you going to do about property taxes, these high property taxes?
Yeah. Well, a couple things that are going on. We continue to support some of the improvements that we made through the gaming legislation that provides support to our all of our homeowners, our homestead owners, as well as the work through the property tax and rent rebate program that we provided back through the Gaming Act. And more importantly, in the city of Pittsburgh, for those city of Pittsburgh residents, the extra kicker that's in there as well. There's strong relief going out along those lines. There are a number of bills that have been proposed. One is Senate Bill 76 that ran into a lot of objections because of how it was going to eliminate property taxes. They said, but at the end of the day, it did not, because you still have to worry about debt service for a school district. So you eliminate a large part of it. But it also shifted about $3 to $4 billion worth of property taxes away from our businesses, our Walmarts, and the large institutions that the for-profit institutions, shifts it away from the businesses and shifts it over to residents, where they would pay an increased or disproportional increase in their sales tax as well as in their personal income tax. Senate Democrats, yesterday we had a retreat on this subject, and we're looking at legislation that would not necessarily eliminate a property tax, but could provide up to a $2,000 rebate to all homeowners, homestead owners, the principal homestead, $2,000 rebate for school property taxes. So if you're paying, if your property taxes are $1,500 for your school district, you would get $1,500 back, and it would be 100% elimination of your property taxes for your school district. If you're paying $3,200 for your school district property taxes, then you would then receive a $2,030 check to help offset that cost. It would not increase, it would not completely eliminate your property taxes in some instances, but in the large majority of Pennsylvanians, it would eliminate their school district property taxes, which we think have become very, very onerous. At the same time, we'll continue to have our property tax and rent rebate program in place, and we will also work to make certain that we could grow that number as time goes on. But more importantly, it doesn't increase some of the other taxes that would be proposed, for example, under Senate Bill 76. And I think that's what we need to recognize. So I think it's a fair balance that provides significant, really significant property tax relief for our school district folks who are paying those taxes. It helps them out a lot, and that's something we're working towards right now.
Chris, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go now to Barton. Barton, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator.
Good evening, Barton.
During the last primary, the candidates for governor, I was present at one of the debates when Jack Wagner brought up the idea that the Pennsylvania Turnpike could be made a showcase for alternative fuels. Considering the growing danger of the global warming crisis, I wondered if you might be interested in eventually working along those lines.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think we have a new chairman at the Turnpike Commission from Allegheny County, Senator Sean Logan, or former Senator Logan, now serving as the chairman, and I believe that they are taking steps to incorporate alternative types of fuel to expand the opportunities along those lines. I know that they made an emphasis on that, and I believe that they will be able to do that. The electric issue as well as natural gas, both those alternatives are being presented, and you'll see. I believe that you'll see an expansion along those lines.
Barton, thank you very much for the call. Senator, we're going to turn back to the callers. Remember, if you have a question this evening for Senator Costa, you can press star 3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to now go to Tim. Tim, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, Senator Costa. My name's Tim Simpson, calling from Braddock Hills. I've been trying to get, I'm on Social Security disability, and I'm not eligible for the Obama Health Care Act to get health care. The public welfare says I'm like $75 over or $50 over. And I can't get health care, and I've been trying, and I can't get the Obamacare because I'm under the tax bracket for it. And my other second question is, former Governor Corbett, when he was in office, signed into law, but if you don't pay your heating bills in the winter, you could be shut off. I was wondering, do you see in the future the Governor Wolf to reverse that and to make it so that doesn't happen?
Yeah, I think that you will see a more compassionate Governor Wolf along those lines. I know that those are Chapter 14 issues that we dealt with in the past, and I think you'll see we just reinstituted Chapter 14 language legislation the course of last year. I think what you'll see is further limitations on the company's ability, the utilities, their ability to do shutoffs, particularly on weekends, for example. We captured that, and we're going to continue to take a look at that because oftentimes those are very, very difficult circumstances that folks are dealing with, and we need to have a governor who's going to provide, and I think we do have a governor who's provide compassionate understanding along those lines, and we have to drive that message to our utility companies, who I think under appropriate circumstances will work with folks. I know our office has done that in the past, and if you have any issues, I suggest you give our office a call with whatever utility that you're dealing with, and we'll work with you along those lines. With respect to the Obamacare or the Medicaid expansion that I think you're referring to, if you need help trying to calculate or navigate through that process at this point, again, call us and we'll hook you up with our Department of Human Services that's managing and administering the Medicaid program. Right now, we are sort of in a transition period, and the sign-up or the enrollment has not been as effective as we thought it needed to, should be or is inviting, I should say, as it needs to be or should be. So we're trying to address and work through those issues, but at the end of the day, we stand ready to help you along those lines as well.
Tim, thank you for your call, Senator. We have a number of people who want to speak with you. We're going to go to Karen. Karen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. It's an honor to speak with you. My question was that you mentioned there will be a shortfall in the budget. And how do you think you will make this up?
Well, I think we make it up in a couple of ways. First and foremost, I think we have to look at our spending and be creative in ways in which we can reduce spending. One of the ways in which we can reduce the spending, anywhere from $200 to $225 million, relates to the Medicaid expansion that we talked about earlier. The governor's proposal, Governor Corbett's implementation, or beginning to implement the Healthy PA program, did not achieve the savings that we believe are necessary to allow us to operate efficiently and appropriately. The private model that he's utilizing is more expensive and less efficient than a managed care model that we have across Pennsylvania right now that has proven to be a very effective model and a very efficient model to drive out managed care and to drive out Medicaid expansion programs. So that's one thing we'll look at. Reversing the Healthy PA program and implement Medicaid expansion, that right between now and June 30th will likely save us It won't save us a whole lot between now and June 30th, but if we implement it fully in 15-16, could achieve about a $200-plus million additional saving than what we talked about. Second area is our long-term care, shifting away from the current way in which we manage long-term care and shift to a managed care model that would, I think, generate an additional $200 million in savings. On the revenue side, we will be looking very seriously at the Marcellus Shale extraction tax, imposing that. And I know that our colleague, Senator Haywood, a new member to the Senate, has introduced legislation that will provide for an 8% Marcellus Shale tax. Others have introduced anywhere from 4.5% to 5% extraction tax. So the range of dollars that we would receive there would likely be around anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion, with a large portion of whatever amount we end up settling on going towards education to fund our educational programs, sort of a dedicated source of revenue for our education. Governor Wolf will certainly be talking about this in his budget address as we go forward as one revenue stream to help us pay for our education, basic ed, K-12, and so you'll see more conversation along those lines. Finally, a couple of the areas that we've talked a lot about that we'll continue to look at. Tax on smokeless tobacco, for example. I know that, you know, we don't tax our cigars. We don't provide a tax on smokeless tobacco. We're one of the few states in the country that don't do that. You know, that could generate between the two of them $120 million plus dollars as we go forward. Those are sort of, those two things I just mentioned are sort of two low-hanging fruit things that we can do. So at the end of the day, it's a combination of reducing spending in a variety of different places and utilize programs and invest in programs that provide our best results. But on the revenue side, we're looking at extraction tax and imposing a couple of other taxes on, for example, as I mentioned, on the on smokeless tobacco and other tobacco products and cigars and the like.
Karen, thank you very much for your for the call and the comments. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press star 3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Joseph. Joseph, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Joseph. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Hey, I have a question.
Sure.
Is there any help available from the state level or the federal level to help struggling EMS services that depend on contributions with all the cutbacks on health care? All the reimbursements have been cut.
Yeah, a couple ways in which I think we've been trying to help our EMS folks along those lines. Obviously, we've tried to put more money into the grant program that we currently have, along with the fire companies, the money that we drive out to our local EMS folks, trying to grow that number or get a greater share of that. The second thing is, one of the things that has been a problem for, as I understand it, for a lot of our organizations has been the manner in which the reimbursement checks come for services. Right now, they come to the homeowner. So if your fire or your EMS service takes me from my home to the hospital, the insurance company reimburses me, the patient, the consumer, and oftentimes a lot of folks who are receiving those checks are not forwarding those checks, as I understand it, to the EMS folks, and that becomes a problem. So you're not getting the amount of revenue that you should be getting from for the service that you provided. So there's talk about doing a dual signature or dual payment or a direct payment to the EMS folks along those lines. So that's one of the ways in which we could enhance your ability to receive the revenues that we need to do. But absent a grant program or a more direct stream of revenue, those are the two sources that I'm aware of that we will work towards.
Joseph, thank you very much for your call, Senator. There's been a number of folks who want to talk about the Highmark UPMC issue, and we're going to bring on Randy. Randy, go ahead. You're live with Senator.
Hi, Senator.
Hi,
thanks,
Randy,
for taking my call. I was wondering if you know if Governor Wolf is planning on getting involved in the Highmark UPMC fiasco, since there still seems to be a lot of confusion as to the continuation of care and the consent decree, and if there's any way that they can be forced to come to an agreement or have their tax-exempt status withdrawn.
Yeah. Well, yes, he has got involved. He brought the issue with respect to, if you were following it recently, the issue regarding the McGee issue and making certain that folks had access to McGee. So, yeah, he did get involved, and I believe he will continue to get involved. Whether or not we're successful in getting these two entities to contract, extend the contract or reinstate a new contract going forward, I can't say that for certain. You know, I've been working with my colleague here in the Senate, Senator Randy Volokovich, as well as Representative Dan Franco in the House, and Representative Jim Christiani in a bipartisan, bicameral way, trying to create language that would impose a binding arbitration on these two entities if they can't come to an agreement. Now, we've not had any success moving that bill up at this point in time. There is a consent decree that has been entered by the insurance commissioner along with the attorney general and the Department of Health. The problem is, though, that there is a lot of ambiguity in that language that I think has created problems, as you mentioned, and it sounds as if, and what we're looking at potentially is any time that there's going to be a disagreement about the intent or what was meant by the consent agreement, it's going to end up in arbitration, it's going to drag things out, it's going to create greater anxiety for folks who are engaged in the middle of that conversation. I think that's wrong. I believe that these two entities need to come together and work together to resolve their differences. My hope is that we can get to a point in time where we haven't expanded, extend the contract. But to answer your question is, I believe you will see Governor Wolf more engaged. I think you will see legislature more engaged as these disputes continue to arise. And I think that at the end of the day, we've got to make sure that it no longer is harmful to the people of Pennsylvania, particularly the western part of the state. To that end, I think that the governor needs to get his legs under him here on the issues that he's dealing with here in Pennsylvania, and I think that we will be able to do that as we go forward. But you will see a much greater emphasis by this governor than a previous governor on trying to address, to put together a sincere and a real resolution to this dispute, as opposed to a consent order that has created more questions than it provided answers.
Thank you very much for the call, Randy. That's a big issue, and that's one that we're going to be dealing with we've dealt with in the past, and we'll be going down the road. Senator, we're going to turn back to Philip. Philip, you're live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Yes, Senator, nice calling you. Look,
thank you.
We need to know, that's the people of Pennsylvania, exactly where you, the governor, and our party stands on minimum wage. Enough rhetoric and bull crap about everything that's going on. Do we stand for it or against it? And what and when are we going to do something?
I stand 100% in support of increasing our minimum wage. I believe that it needs to be at a $10.10 level over the course of the next couple years, as been proposed by our colleague here in the Senate, Senator Tina Tartaglione, who's been a longtime champion of increasing the minimum wage. I support it in the past, and I will continue to support it. When you look around the surrounding states around Pennsylvania, when you look at New York and New Jersey and Maryland and Ohio, all those states have implemented a minimum wage that is greater than the 7-something we have now, 7.25 we have in place today. They're all at 9 or roughly or very close to $9 an hour, and at least I think one of those states I mentioned is working towards 10.10 in the course of a couple of years. So the conversation needs to take place now. We have a rally up here that's going to take place very soon here in Harrisburg along those lines, and we believe that it does a number of things. It allows people, first of all, foremost, it does not have the negative impact on businesses as people portray it to be. And I think what it does, it raises the level of awareness or ability of folks to live a decent life relative to their income. When you talk about a $7.25 amount, you know, you have folks who are working full-time, living below the federal poverty level. That's simply unacceptable. We can't go from 725 to 1010 over the course of months. We have to build upon that, and that's what we're talking about doing. There are some bills that Republicans have introduced here in the Senate, but not quite as what I think as robust as they need to be to position Pennsylvania to be a leader among the states in this region, or at least compete with the surrounding states that are all going towards increasing the minimum wage. So I stand firmly behind it. I know Governor Wolf does. Our Senate Democratic Caucus stands behind it as well to increase the minimum wage.
Philip, thank you very much for the call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Koss, you can press *3 on your keypad. We'll get you on the line as quickly as possible. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers now, and we're going to go to Lynette. Lynette, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa.
Hi, Lynette.
Hi. Piggybacking on what the former, what the previous caller talked about, minimum wage, and you talked about a livable wage, because the people I know, they are not, they can't live off of $7.25, and even if we get the minimum wage raised, I'm looking at people who live in public housing, they can't make it either because then their rent goes up. Part two, about a livable wage, what about the people who have college degrees? What do we do about that?
In terms of helping them achieve a greater wage, you mean?
Yes, yes, because there are some who have college degrees, masters who are working for minimum wage. That's why a lot of our students leave Pittsburgh and leave Western Pennsylvania, because they can't find decent jobs.
There's no question that that is a contributing factor to folks who leave our region. And I would tell you that I think that we have to do something about maintaining particularly our folks who are leaving our institutions here, graduating, and then leaving the region. And it's precisely related to opportunities, and it's related to the wage level along those lines. We have to do what we can, and we're continuing to pursue other opportunities along the lines of growing jobs in Pennsylvania that are good-paying, family-sustaining jobs. When we talk about the minimum wage, that's one way in which we can achieve that. But as you said earlier, even if we go to $8.50 or so, that's still not where we need to be. We have to do more along those lines. I would tell you that we have been working to grow jobs in Pennsylvania. We have what's called a PA Works program, where we have a series of bills that are aimed at making investments in a variety of ways to help stimulate our economy and to allow an opportunity for our local businesses and our business owners to be able to grow jobs and create jobs in Pennsylvania, where they'll be able to provide a sustainable wage, which I think is important. So we're cognizant of that, and we have to do what we can along those lines to grow those jobs. But it's not easy. We've given a lot of business tax cuts over the course of the past several years, $1 billion plus, and with the anticipation or the expectation or the belief that the business community would then take those savings, those tax savings, and then reinvest them back into the region, into the businesses, and to grow jobs and increase wages. That part hasn't happened. So while we've been sympathetic to the business climate here in the Commonwealth, business tax climate, we've been disappointed that we've not seen the reciprocation, or they're not reciprocating, I should say, with respect to what their part of the bargain has been, and that's been disappointing.
Lynette, thank you very much for the calls. Appreciate that. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Michael. Michael, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa. Michael, you there?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Senator. It's nice that you're doing this. What my question is about is I am on the no-caller list for telephone solicitors, and I have been for years, and it seems to work only on and off. And I recently renewed my registration with both the state and federal list a few months ago. But they're starting to call me up again. Matter of fact, I got two today. And the thing is, when you are, they give you an option to press a number that will supposedly remove your name from the list, and that never works. So if you press the number where you get to talk to somebody, they very often hang up on you without even saying anything when you tell them, even politely, please remove me from the list. So, you know, that's what it's like if you try to do things polite. Now, a few months ago when this was going on, I kind of got less polite with these people and very firm and, you know, whatever. But anyway, they actually started getting vulgar with me. And more than once, like even insulted my dead mother. So, so what good are these no-call lists if you get on them and you can't, it seems as though people don't pay attention to them. Oh, another thing before you answer is, one thing they do is, if you ask them to quit calling you, sometimes they say okay, but then within a few days, you look at your caller ID, it'll be supposedly another company. So it's like they're trading your name around.
Well, I think that what I ask you to do, Michael, is give my office a call and ask for Elaine, and we will get in touch with the Attorney General's office to make certain that we get to the bottom of that as to why your name continues to appear on some of these lists. My guess is that they may believe that they fall within one of the very limited exceptions to the Do Not Call list. That's what we need to find out, and I'm happy to be able to do that with you.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thanks for the call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we're moving through a number of questions here, so the wait's not too long. We're going to go to Marcia now. Marcia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you very much. My question is partly a budget question and partly a humanity question, and that is I was wondering what the focus is going to be on reducing the prison population in Pennsylvania is part of it. And then the second part is decriminalizing marijuana. Actually, I'd prefer to have it legalized so we could have the same revenue problems that Colorado has right now where they're bursting at the seams. But I'd just like your thoughts on both of those. Thank you.
Well, with respect to the latter question, decriminalizing marijuana, I don't think you're going to see that happen anytime soon in Pennsylvania. I don't think that there's the will in the General Assembly to even have that conversation. We're struggling to even get passed here a medical marijuana piece of legislation, overwhelmingly passed the Senate, which I supported, and my other colleagues. I believe we passed it 45-5, if I'm not mistaken, or 47-3. Unfortunately, we're not able to get our colleagues in the House of Representatives to support it to the same degree. So my first focus along those lines will be to get medical marijuana available to the folks who need it, and it provides a great level of comfort and support and assistance to folks who have been suffering with a number of conditions that we need to address. With respect to prison and prison costs, I'm happy to report to you that we put into place 2 years ago a set of Democratic initiative, the Justice Reinvestment Act, where we participated and had a lot of work done on it. It basically provides a variety of things to really divert individuals from going into our prisons. It relates to things about providing care and treatment as opposed to housing in individuals who have been incarcerated, who have been convicted. That's having some success. We've reduced, you know, we were on a trend to go, I believe, up to like 55 or 56,000 inmates across Pennsylvania had we not made any changes. Now we're reversing that trend, and the trend is now going in the opposite direction. And we have more folks, I think, incarcerated at the end of this year than we had for a number of years before. So we're working in the right direction to reduce the number of individuals who are incarcerated, which in turn reduces our costs along those lines. The savings that we achieve, part of the savings that we achieve, we then take those savings and we turn around and reinvest them back into our communities. We reinvest them in, again, additional programming to allow for folks to be addressed in the community as opposed to being incarcerated. We're investing resources back into our local municipal police departments to help them and assist them on the front end of fighting crime and crime prevention programs. Those are some of the things that we're doing along those lines, and we'll continue to work towards that end. We're very fortunate in Pennsylvania. We have a very, very good Secretary of Corrections, Secretary Wetzel, who I think is exceptional. And I'm very pleased that although he was appointed in the Corbett administration, Governor Wolf has chosen to keep him here as our secretary because of his creativity and his innovative approach to how we deal with our inmate population in Pennsylvania, and it doesn't become one of those budget lines that continues to grow disproportionately than other lines do. So we're real pleased about where we're going in that direction, and the goal is to keep folks out of our prisons first and foremost with treatment, but also with crime prevention programs and other programs that reduce that number.
Marcia, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers.
Yep.
If you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to go to a question about Ardmore Boulevard. Lori, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Lori. How are you today? I'm calling regarding the building that is on the corner of Braddock and Ardmore. It sort of has been vacant for a very long time. It looked like they were going to try and get somebody in there and fix up the building. Then a bulldozer came in, took a big chunk out of the side, the windows are gone, and now they put a big fence around it. Do you have any idea of the future?
Yes. I'm very familiar with the building. It's right down the street from my home, I think, as you know. The EPI building, we are working very closely with Borough Council. Councilman Tomasic in particular has demonstrated a very significant interest in this, as well as myself and the CDC, which Ross Neese, Forest Hills resident, is the head of. We're working right now with a group of folks to purchase the building and try to, it needs to be demoed, and we're working towards that end, and there are some ideas that have been circulated that I really can't talk about right now, but rest assured that we're working towards a solution to clean up what I think is a very bad eyesore. But I'm happy to report to you that progress is being made, and whenever folks get the plans together to submit to council through the appropriate planning process and the council process and the like, we will have a positive resolution that I believe will provide for an appropriate entry into, as we start to go into the park and the business community in Forest Hills, that would be consistent with needs to be done along Ardmore Boulevard, but also make certain that it takes into consideration the impact and what the aesthetics as it transitions up the hill on Braddock Road into the residential community. So we have to be cautious about that, and I'm well aware of it, and I'm going to be an integral part of that conversation as we go forward to bring the appropriate resolution to that. But you're correct. We've done a lot of great things in Forest Hills, and we're going to continue to do that. But we first and foremost need to address this particular issue, and I think we will over the course of the next 6 to 9 months. You'll see activity taking place.
Hillary, thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers now. We're going to go to Jonathan. Jonathan, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you very much, Senator. My question on transport. Hi. We finally, after years of effort by a lot of people, including you, Senator, passed Act 89, providing some funding for public transportation to prevent further destructive cuts in service. It was minimally adequate, and we're told legislators want it spent on deferred maintenance, which is good, and debt repayment, which I suppose is necessary, and minimally for service. And we have a lot of areas that lost service where it was used and did as well as other public transit service that haven't been able to get them back. Baldwin, you've certainly heard about, Moon Township, and what can we do to get some funding to restore service? Our county executive says he doesn't want to use any of the drink tax, any more of the drink tax, because he doesn't want to increase funding unless there is a state match. What can we do to provide a modest amount of additional money to restore some of the service that was cut only because of financial shortfalls of the lack of funding? And what is the long run term?
Here's what I can say.
Act 89 only will last six more years, I think.
Yeah. Well, two things. On that part of it, the restoration of or the replacement of the revenue from the Turnpike Commission, between now and the next couple of years, we have to seriously address how we fund mass transit. And we will do that. And we will not put a hole in mass transit budget across the Commonwealth. We will be responsible and make sure that that happens. With respect to the use of the resources through Act 89, you know, Jonathan, they ramp up over the course of 5 years till we reach a plateau where it's about $2.5 billion. I understand the concern that folks have talked about the reinstituting routes, and I know I deal with that issue up on Greensburg Pike in the East Hills, and I know the Baldwin folks have raised a significant concern. I believe that those issues are being discussed at this point in time, and I know that as more revenue starts to come in, Jonathan, I think you'll start to see shifting away a little bit from the maintenance side of it, and more maybe going towards the reinstitutes of routes. That's my goal. That's the charge that I provided to my appointee on that board. As Democratic leader, I have an appointment to that Port Authority board. I chose Senator Jim Brewster to serve in that capacity. I think he's serving as an officer there, so he's very much engaged in those conversations. And Senator Brewster has been diligent in working to make sure that we have a serious discussion about reinstituting various routes or modifying routes to capture more and more folks. to be able to pick more and more folks up to increase ridership. So we're working towards that end. It's going slower than I had hoped, but I think that I will continue to have the conversation with Senator Brewster, as well as the executive director of the Port Authority, who I think also needs to understand that that needs to be a focus and an emphasis as we go forward.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Jonathan. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Liz, who has a campaign finance question for you.
Okay.
Liz, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello. Yes. Thanks for giving people a voice. But many of us feel that our lives are completely controlled by people like the Koch brothers and Big Oil, yeah, et cetera, that everything, we're just losing it. And I hope that there's some place, something regards campaign reform will happen so that these people can be stopped and we can feel some power when we go to vote. All right? Thanks.
That's a great, great point, and I've been working on that issue. Years back, I joined team with Senator Jane Earle from Erie, a Republican senator, and myself, you know, champion campaign finance reform. She left the Senate 2 years ago, so the last 2 years, and even this year again, I've picked up that mantle and have made a major part of our reform package and my reform package that we're talking about. You know, I just went through a campaign cycle as Democratic leader. My job is to get Democrats elected and Senate seats all across Pennsylvania. And quite frankly, it was extremely offensive, the amount of money that was spent over the course of the past year. And we have to put limits. We have to make certain that people know who are making contributions. They cannot be hide behind these independent expenditure groups, these 529 groups and the like. We have to bring some sanity back to this discussion. I have been proposing campaign finance rules and laws that we have, should have in Pennsylvania, limiting the number of dollars individuals can contribute, similar to what they do in Pittsburgh, just like what they do in Philadelphia, just like they do at the federal level. We in Pennsylvania are one of the few states that don't have campaign finance limits and regulations in place that are more open, more transparent, and don't distort the process to effectuate situations where if you're wealthy and have money you can dump into these races that or other folks who want to contribute and influence those races, we have to have limitations along those lines. The second part of that conversation is really what's going to take place at the federal level. We've had at least two very difficult to understand campaign finance rulings that came out of our Supreme Court, very disturbing, but they've had a significant impact not only on Pennsylvania but across the country with the dollars that are then being put in. You mentioned the Koch brothers. I think I read recently they're going to invest about $800 million or so in races around the country. That just blows my mind that kind of money is going to be used to influence from special interest groups and just a couple of people. So it's a major issue. One of the things that I'm working on, and I will again be ruling that legislation out, and we're going to have a greater conversation in my view, because I think Governor Wolf would recognize and understand and appreciate the value and the role that campaign limits will play as we go forward.
Thank you very much for the call, Senator. We're going to go back to the callers here. We're going to bring on Maria. Maria, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator.
Hi, Maria.
I am a new resident of the Pittsburgh area. I'm only here less than a year, and I'm very unfamiliar with the whole system here. I try and read the local newspapers to get some kind of an input. But coming from central Pennsylvania, my question is, I have been plagued by a company or whatever to reduce your light bill, your energy bill. Now, they're so overpassionate about this. They want your information over the phone, which I will not give. I may be 83 years old, but I'm not stupid. Not yet.
Especially, yeah.
So my question is, they're so overpassionate, sometimes getting 3 calls a day and calling as late as 8 o'clock at night, it just doesn't make sense. And there is no recourse. They've never put it in the newspaper as to what the criteria on this energy thing to reduce your bill is. Is there a income level that you have to qualify for? There's no advertisement, nothing in the newspaper at all about this, and it seems very strange to me.
Well, what we have, thank you very much for your call. Maria, and what we have in place is we've deregulated the delivery of electricity in the Commonwealth a number of years ago. I think it was 1996 or 1997 when we did that, which meant that companies would be able to, it was open and territories were open to be able to contact consumers as it relates to the delivery, one aspect of the delivery of the electricity to them. And these companies compete, and they work towards trying to get customers, and they try to drive the price down, and that's what we said. And what it has done, it has provided for a lower electricity rate for folks because there's competition, and I think that's what folks look at. I do agree that I think they have become a little aggressive or too aggressive in the market. And one of the things that we've talked about with our, the PUC, particularly with one of my former staff folks, one of my former staff attorneys, Gladys Brown, who is now a PUC commissioner, we have talked with Gladys a number of times about this issue and how we can work with them to make certain that these entities are not, these businesses are not to, or the utilities, I should say, I guess, are not, they don't cross the line with respect to their marketing activities. So we, it sounds like we need to rein them in again, but this is a direct result of the deregulation of electricity in Pennsylvania, and it allows us to drive out a lower cost for our electricity. That's why you see what they're doing. And you don't have to pick any of them. And you could not pick anyone, and you're in a Duquesne Light Service territory, so you would just simply default to, as I understand it, to the Duquesne Light entity that they have their company there that provides the discounted rate as well. So you can pick one of those other companies, and then they won't bother you anymore, or you can allow it to go to default, which it sounds like you may have done, and that's why they're reaching out to you to try to solicit you to be one of their customers.
Thank you very much for the call. I know, Senator, you have some comments relative to but let's see if we can
get one more call
on here. We're going to get Joyce. Go ahead. You're going to be live with Senator Costa. Have to be quick here. Go ahead, Joyce.
Hi, Senator Costa. I'm a senior citizen on the south side of Pittsburgh, and somehow have accumulated leftover paint and hazardous waste items, and I wondered if there could be a plan for the garbage pickup to expand to once a month or every 2 months for waste items. Currently, the locations that they provide are so far away and cost so much to have someone take them for us.
So let me take a look at that with the city of Pittsburgh. I will communicate with their chief of operations who has jurisdiction, I think, over environmental services or what, how those programs operate. And if you can do me a favor, give me a call. I will get an answer for you. Give my district office a call and ask for Elaine at 412-241-6690. Ask for Elaine, and we'll be able to get an answer to that question for you, what their plans are or how we can more efficiently address the concern that you raised, because I think it's an important environmental issue that needs to be addressed. We simply have to make it more accessible. Those type of pickups and the like need to be more accessible, need to be more of them to, for environmental reasons. So thank you very much. Give our office a call, and we'll go from there.
I know you have some closing comments today.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for participating in these telephone town halls. I think they've been helpful for us to get a pulse of what's going on, not only in our district, but some of the issues that are impacting folks both locally, like we heard about the UPMC Highmark issue, but also things related to our environmental issues regarding trash collection and things of that nature. So I'd like to say thank you to all of our listeners. I know we have a number of other folks who have questions we weren't able to get to. We will be doing another town hall meeting very soon. I would also encourage you to reach out to us either through email or also through our Facebook page. You can look at senatoracosta.com and also the Facebook area. So reach out to us in a variety of ways, and we'll try to respond to your questions. And again, you can always call the office and ask for me, 412-241-6690. I'm still here in Harrisburg today. I'll be back in Pittsburgh tomorrow. I'll be happy to answer any questions or set up any meetings that folks like to have going forward. So, Hugh, thank you for being a moderator today, and thank all of you for listening.
Thank you very much for everybody who has joined us this evening. We appreciate you sharing the evening with us. Thank you.
Good night.